Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Seems like Mark Twain's having a bad day.
Sāna-śrāma,
pulāpeta,
pulāpeta,
vāna-śrāma, pulāpeta,
vāna-śrāma, pulāpeta,
vāna-śrāma, pulāpeta,
vāna-śrāma, pulāpeta,
sarva,
sarva,
dharma,
dharma,
bahis,
bahis,
krita,
krita,
Sarvadama Bahiskrita,
Sarvadama Bahiskrita,
Sarvadama Bahiskrita,
Sarvadama Bahiskrita,
Vanashrama Kulapeta,
Vanashrama Kulapeta,
Sarvadharma Bahiskrita,
Sarvadharma Bahiskrita,
Svaira,
Svaira,
Bharti,
Bharti,
Gunai,
Gunai,
Hina,
Hina,
Svaira Bhakti Gunaihina,
Svaira Bhakti Gunaihina,
Svaira Bhakti Gunaihina,
Svaira Bhakti Gunaihina,
Sapariyam,
Sapariyam,
Katam,
Katam,
Mahati,
Mahati,
Sapariyam, Katamahati,
Sapariyam, Katamahati,
Sapariyam, Katamahati,
Sapariyam, Katamahati,
Svaira Vati Gunaihina,
Svaira Vati Gunaihina,
Sapariyam Katamahati,
Sapariyam Katamahati,
Vanashrama Pulapeta,
Vanashrama Pulapeta,
Sarvadharma Bahiskrita,
Sarvadharma Bahiskrita,
Svaira Vati Gunaihina,
Svaira Vati Gunaihina,
Sapariyam Katamahati,
Varnashrama
Kulapeta,
Varnashrama Kulapeta,
Sarvadharma Bahiskrita,
Sarvadharma Bahiskrita,
Svaira Varti Gunaihina,
Svaira Varti Gunaihina,
Sapariyam Katam Ahati,
Sapariyam Katam Ahati.
So I don't know if this has been described very much, but the situation here is that Shishupal is engaged in blaspheming Krishna. And it's not just like he's saying bad things. I mean, he's really letting it fly out. You know, he's just, anything he can imagine, any despicable sort of way of addressing Krishna, he's just scraping the bottom of the barrel for abuse. And he's really saying some quite horrible things. And there's a bit of a history there, because Shishupal was born a little bit of an unusual birth. You know, he had four arms and three eyes when he was born. And when he was born, as we see in a lot of these stories, there was an unembodied voice in the sky was saying, because his parents were very concerned, well, this is not very nice. He's got four arms, he's got an extra eye in the middle of his head. This is kind of strange. So there was an unembodied voice in the sky said that when he is placed on the lap of the person who will kill him, his arms will drop off and his extra eye will vanish. I mean, that's not exactly what was said, but it's something like that. So then what his parents did was that every guest who came to the house then, they would put the child upon that person's lap. And they were doing this for years and years and years, and then one day, Krishna came. Because actually, Shishupal's mother was the sister of Vasudeva. So they had a paternal relationship there. And So they every time someone came, they were putting the child on the lap of the person who was visiting. So when Krishna came, they took the child and they put it on Krishna's lap. Put the child on Krishna's lap. And the arms dropped off and the eye vanished. And then they understood that Krishna would be the person who killed the child. And then so the mother was offering prayers to Krishna, please, be merciful upon, don't kill my child. Because obviously it's natural, the mother's very attached to the child. And she doesn't want the child to be killed. And just like you see with Prabhupada, his mother was doing so many different things for Prabhupada's protection. Like she made a vow. She took a vow that when Prabhupada was born, that she would eat with her left hand for the child's protection until the child asked her why she was doing that. And we see, you can read that in the Lila Amrita, how Prabhupada's mother would eat with her left hand until Prabhupada asked her, why are you doing this? And she was doing so many little things like that for the child's protection. So also we see that Shishupala's mother was obviously wanting to do things to protect her child, especially from serious things. You know, like, mothers are very careful to make sure the child's warm and such like that so they don't get cold. But when they find that this person is going to kill their child, then obviously they want to be very, very protective. So she was pleading with Krishna. So then Krishna said, I will tolerate, you know, because the reason the child would be killed by Krishna is because of abuse, you know, verbal abuse. So he said, I will tolerate, I think it was 100 offenses. I don't remember if it was 100 or 1,000, but, you know, just, you probably offered most 100 just in this little pastime here. He said, I will tolerate 100 offenses from this person, but on the 101st, I will kill him. And it's very interesting, because we'll see, you know, in a couple of verses, how Shishupal was killed by Krishna with his Sudarshan Chakra. Now, this is significant also. He wasn't just killed, because we see that, you know, with the abuse that was coming from Shishupal, because there were many devotees of Krishna present in that arena, and they were getting very, very upset by this abuse. Now, this is the Rajasuya Yajna, and as we know with any yajna, the place where the yajna is performed must be pure. If the place is contaminated, then you cannot perform a yajna. Just like we see in the story of what's his name? The Prajapati? Sati's father? Daksha. Daksha was performing a yajna for the satisfaction of the Lord. Actually, for the satisfaction of the demigods to get some material benefit. And he insulted Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva, he was, you know, he didn't actually understand Lord Shiva's position as the most exalted personality. He was thinking, well, he's just my son-in-law, you know, because he's married my daughter. Therefore, he's inferior to me. But he didn't actually understand Lord Shiva's superior position. So he disrespected Lord Shiva in various ways. So Lord Shiva didn't come to the performance of the yajna. And then when Sati went to the yajna, she saw that her husband was being disrespected and how her father ignored her, so she became very, very upset. And then she performed what is now known as Sati. She actually self-combusted herself. And Lord Shiva, when he found out this had happened, was furious, and he came and, you know, he sent his pisachas and pretas and, you know, all the various ghosts and hobgoblins along, and they went along and desecrated the arena. You know, even he created this big demon, and the demon went and was actually urinating on the fire. You know, and they chopped the head off Daksha, and later on Lord Shiva put a ghost head and various things like that, and just completely desecrated the place, and therefore the yajna could not be performed, so the place had to be purified. So in the same way here, Krishna, you know, this is a bit of a different circumstance, because Daksha was performing this for material benediction. He was after, you know, karma kanda results. He wanted to get, you know, fruited results from the performance of his yajna. Whereas Yudhisthira Maharaj, he was performing the Rajasuya yajna not for his personal benefit. He was simply interested in glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That was his motivation. And there were many great devotees of Krishna there. There were also, you know, great sages and rishis were present, because in those days, like, you know, you see these days when you perform a yajna here in the temple, for instance, you're lucky if you can get all the devotees to come, you know, who are supposed to be, you know, this is a, you know, when a yajna is performed, this is a moment of great auspiciousness. And, you know, devotees, it's good if we can attend these, because, you know, the Lord is being worshipped, the Vaishnavas are being worshipped, etc. like that. And you know, most of you perform yajnas at various, you know, samskars or rites of passage. You know, this is a great step for a person in their spiritual life. I mean, you know, either they're getting initiated, or they're getting married, or they're getting Brahman initiation, or they're doing some yajna for children. These are great steps in a person's life on the path back to Krishna. So the idea is that all devotees attend these in order to offer their blessings. Because we're so, you know, like, we understand we're completely dependent upon the mercy of the Vaishnavas. If we don't have the mercy of the Vaishnavas, how can we possibly succeed? Okay. And there's an interesting verse I was reading from Mathura Manaha yesterday. Mathura Manaha was reading from the 17th chapter of the Gita. And it was talking about, Krishna's talking about, you know, performance of yajna and sacrifice and charity and the different modes of nature. And he's saying that that yajna, where there's no distribution of grains, you know, prasadam, Prabhupada says, there's no, and the yajna is not done with, in accordance with the shastra, or there's no remuneration to the priests, meaning you give charity to the person who's performing, the hotri, the person who's performing the yajna. And then Krishna says that this is in the mode of ignorance. So the reason that you do these things, the reason why do you distribute prasadam to the Brahmins and to the Vaishnavas? Why? How do you feel after you've eaten prasadam? Nice prasadam. Happy. Yeah? You feel satisfied. So when a person's satisfied, what do? Ashirvad. They give blessings. It's just, if you ever want to ask someone something, you know, you want to ask someone a special favor, the best time to ask them is after they've had a good meal, because they're more inclined to give. And if you ask before the meal, then they're thinking, you know, about the meal, about eating. And so it's not a good time to ask. So the best time is after. More inclined to give blessings. So we distribute prasad to the Vaishnavas because we understand they'll give blessings. Not the way we have this motivation. Oh, I'll distribute prasad so that I can get a blessing. No, this is a materialistic motivation. We want to please the Vaishnavas so that we can be blessed with success in spiritual life. That's the motivation. So, you know, Yudhisthira Maharaj, same thing. He's performing this yajna because he wants to satisfy Krishna. He wants to please Krishna. He wants to please the Brahmanas. He wants to please the Vaishnavas. And he's invited many great personalities. You know, even we see that, you know, like all the rishis from the heavenly planets, the demigods have come. And you read the descriptions about, you know, the personalities that come. And it's really interesting also because you see at this Rajasuya Yajna, he had invited all his relatives as well. Even the relatives that were inimical towards him. He invited all the Kauravas. You know, Duryodhan was there, and Dhritarashtra was there, and Karna was there. You know, all Duryodhan's brothers were there. And we see that, you know, Karna, he was in charge of giving charity. Everyone who came, he was in charge of giving charity. Duryodhan, he was in charge of the treasury. He was receiving all the gifts, which is kind of interesting because when he saw how much wealth the Pandavas were given, he became his envy. Already he was very envious, you know, because the Pandavas had received Draupadi, because the Pandavas were the rightful heirs to the throne. He wanted it, but he wasn't qualified, because his father was blind from birth, therefore he wasn't qualified. And you know, when he saw how much wealth was brought, I mean, keep in mind, like Hastinapur, not Hastinapur, where was this yajna performed? Was Kandavaprastha built at that point? Indraprastha, yeah, that's right, the Kandava forest had been devoured, so it was in Indraprastha this yajna had been performed. And the city was very big, gigantic city, yet the city was the amount of donations that were bought for the Pandavas for this Rajasuya Yajna was so great they couldn't fit inside the city. They actually had to build, you know, put up tents and pandals outside the city to store the wealth. And it was just incredible. There's so much wealth. And this made Duryodhan so envious that they had so much wealth, you know, and he's being crowned the king. I should be getting this honor. And this whole mood of envy was pervading the entire atmosphere here. You know, you see like Shishupal, he was so envious. When Krishna was being accepted as the person to become worshipped, he became so envious. He couldn't tolerate that someone like Krishna was getting glorified. And we see that, you know, Krishna, he killed him in a very interesting way because he used his Sudarshan Chakra. Now, the Sudarshan Chakra, it is very hot, fire. Yeah, it's just like we read that story of when Devasa Muni offended Ambarish, how the chakra was chasing him all over the universe and burning him from behind. Very hot. And see, because like what was happening was all those who were supporters of Krishna, there was two large camps here. There was like those who were envious of Krishna, envious of the Pandavas. They sided with Shishupal. And we see, when Shishupal was killed, they took the opportunity of confusion to sneak out the back door. you know, because they didn't want to be seen, and they didn't want to, you know, participate in the glorification of Krishna. Yet all those who were supporting Krishna became so angry they were drawing swords ready to kill this demon and all these supporters. So Krishna was considering, if they do this, there will be blood spilt all over the place. Blood is the most contaminating thing. It is, you know, if you bleed on the altar, for instance, it is just so contaminated. You know? So if you ever bleed, you need to be very, very careful that you know, to stop the bleeding and to cover it up and clean up. You know, wash your hands, wash wherever the blood has dropped, and even, you know, it's recommended to wash with cow dung, etc., like that. And some things, you know, like cloth, when it becomes contaminated with blood, you just throw it out. It's become useless. You can't use it. But so Krishna was concerned that the yajna arena, or yajnashala, would become contaminated. So rather than have these people kill Shishupal, because they were ready to do it, they would have done it. You know, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakul, Sahadeva, Yudhisthira, ready to kill him. And so many great kings, you know, were ready to immediately take off his head. So Krishna said, no, if I use my Sudarshan chakra, no blood will be spilled, because the wound will be, you know, they used to do, I don't know if they still do it, but they used to cauterize, if someone had a wound, they would take heat and they would sear the skin so it wouldn't burn anymore. They still do things like that? Yeah? Very, very painful. So, but anyhow, the chakra just like sealed it up so no blood fell in the arena. And because it was Krishna's weapon, his body actually became purified. And so, right, because Krishna was manifesting his glories there, manifesting his potencies, it purified the atmosphere, rather than if the kings had done it, it would have contaminated the atmosphere. So, interesting pastime. So, we'll pass for the word for Varana. Of the principles of the four occupational orders of society, Ashrama. Of the four spiritual orders, Kula, and of proper family upbringing, Abheda, devoid. So he's saying here that Krishna is devoid of all considerations of Varna, Ashrama, and also he has no proper upbringing. What is he? He's a cowherd boy. Useless fellow. What's he doing in this arena? Sarva, from all dharma, codes of religious duty, bahikrita, excluded. Because he's saying that, you know, this Krishna, what's he famous for? He's famous for consorting with other people's wives in the forest in the dead of night. So irreligious. This is what he's saying. Svaira, independently. Vati, behaving. Gunai, qualities. Hina, lacking. Saparayam, worship. Katam, how. Ahati, deserves. So he's asking a question, saying, you know, he's so devoid of quality, he's such a irreligious person. How is he deserving to be worshipped? Read the translation. How does one who follows no principles of the social and spiritual orders or of family ethics, who has been excluded from all religious duties, who behaves whimsically, and who has no good qualities, how does such a person deserve to be worshipped? Responsibly, please. How does one who follows no principles of the social and spiritual orders or of family ethics, who has been excluded from all religious duties, who behaves whimsically, and who has no good qualities, how does such a person deserve to be worshipped? Very interesting. I mean, you know, imagine he's saying these things about Krishna, who, you know, for us is the most worshipful personality. Yet we see, this is explained by the Acharyas, how, and Acharya, also there's a section I'll just read here from the Antilila where Sarup Damodar, there was one Bengali poet came and he was offering a very famous pastime. He was offering glorification of Lord Chaitanya, and he was saying how Daru Brahman has now manifest as Lord Chaitanya. He was saying how the wooden god, you know, Sarup Damodar Goswami was pointing out his fault in his poetic composition, saying how that, you know, God is not made of wood. And he's saying, yet Sarup Damodar Goswami was saying how the goddess Saraswati, even though you've been perfectly composed, the goddess Saraswati is manifested in your using your words to serve the Supreme Lord. So in the same way, we see how the Acharyas explain that even though Shishupal here is being very, very blasphemous and offensive towards Krishna, how because of the choice of words he's using, these words have other meanings. It's not just a direct meaning. We see sometimes also in various pastimes how Vach or Saraswati manifest on the person's tongue to confuse or bewilder them, or to get them a little bit tongue-tied so they actually mispronounce the syllables, just like with Kumbhakarna. Now, he was asking for a particular benediction, and he actually said the word wrong, and instead of Yeah. So, what was he initially asking for? But what does that mean in English? Yeah, so he's asking for the seed of Indra, and instead he said Nidrasana, which essentially means that he'll spend all the time sleeping. He'll only wake up, you know, a couple of times a year. And that was, he was a gigantic person, huge. Yeah, and it's described how, you know, when Ram attacked Lanka, how they had to use the whole army and throw like huge reservoirs of water on him to wake him up. You know, they had elephants pushing on him to roll him over and stuff like that. And he would just sleep for months and months and months of time, and he would wake up and he would be hungry because he slept for so long, and he'd eat huge quantities of food, and then he'd go back to sleep again. So, and many, many circumstances like that, in different pastimes where the goddess Saraswati or the goddess Vach, who's the goddess of speech, would cause a bit of confusion there or tongue-tied, you know, so they would say the wrong words. So just, fifth chapter here. So this is Sarup Damodar Goswami is talking to this Brahmana. He says, you have written something irregular, not knowing the regular principles, but the goddess of learning, Saraswati, has used your words to offer her prayers to the Supreme Lord. So a great devotee, she's using even these incorrect words to glorify the Supreme Lord. She's using it as an opportunity for service. Sometimes demons and even Lord Indra, the King of Heaven, chastise Krishna, but Mother Saraswati, taking advantage of their words, offered prayers to the Lord. Because actually, all inauspicious things resolve themselves in Krishna. Even though someone may be attempting to blaspheme Krishna, that actually the words are taken to be glorification. There's a few other texts here, but then he talks about, he's going through and explaining how all these different words mean different things. And then in text, I think it's 147, 146, he says, Shishupal also blasphemed Krishna in this way, but the goddess of learning, Saraswati, offered her prayers to Krishna, even by his words. In that way, although your verse is blasphemous according to your meaning, Mother Saraswati has taken advantage of it to offer prayers to the Lord. So devotees see all various circumstances as opportunities to serve Krishna. And of course, Saraswati being, you know, so the goddess of learning, so knowledgeable about Sanskrit, she's able to use the words of Shishupal to glorify the Lord. And we see, you know, if you read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries on this section, and some of them have been quoted here, in the previous purport, they're also quoting from Sridhar Swami, how the words they're using to blaspheme Krishna can also be understood as a glorification of Krishna. And this is, as we're saying, this is the nature of Krishna, because all these contradictions, all these negative things resolve themselves in Krishna. So that even though some may see it as being a negative thing, because it's connected with Krishna, because he's all good, because he's all pure, then it is a positive thing. Yeah? Or there's that, I don't know if you, has anyone heard that story, everything Krishna does is okay? It's a really interesting story. It's like, I think it may be, it was a Tenali Ram story or a not Gopal Bandirbal, one of these stories. You know, so Tenali Ram and Birbal are probably the same person, you know, because the Tenali Ram is more in South India, Birbal is more in North India. Also Gopal Band, you know, Prabhupada would tell Gopal Band stories all the time. Probably the same person, because the stories are very, very similar. Anyhow, so in one of these stories, Birbal was the advisor to King Akbar, and then Tenali Ram was the advisor to Krishnadeva Roy. So same kind of thing. So anyhow, one time the advisor is saying to the king, you know, the king was complaining about this. He says, but your majesty, everything Krishna does is okay. And the king was, he just couldn't get on with this. It was just, you know, this is just too much. You know, I can't believe this. How's that possible? Anyhow, one day he's sharpening his sword. You know, and the kings, you know, they have, I don't know if you've ever seen, I remember seeing one of the swords that in Rajasthan in Jaipur, they had the city palace, and part of the city palace they had this museum. Has anyone been to that museum? They had these gigantic swords. There's one sword about 7 foot long. You know, I mean, I used to be reasonably strong, but I couldn't lift it. It's such a big thing, you know. And these chakras are just like one hand, you know, chopping people up, you know. There's even, you can go to the city palace in Udaipur, which is south of Jaipur, just near Nathdwar, which is the place where Nataji is. A very, very beautiful place. Anyhow, there's a whole history there. And there's one time where the two brothers were fighting. You know, and it shows this story of how this one brother, he took the sword and he cut his brother in half from head to, you know, straight down the middle. And not only did he cut his brother in half, he cut the horse in half as well, just like straight through one swipe of the sword. Very powerful persons. So anyhow, so this chakra, he's sharpening his sword, very powerful person, and he slipped, cut off his finger. Yeah. And then so he called in his advisor. He says, so now you're saying everything is okay? Look what happened. I'm missing my finger. Yeah? You're saying everything Krishna does is okay? And he says, yes, your majesty. Everything Krishna does is okay. And he said, you offensive rascal, put him in jail. He said, this is not right. So anyhow, later on, you know, because chakras are very powerful. Imagine if I cut off a finger, I'd be like wailing and howling and off to the hospital and this thing and that thing. And, you know, chakras are not like that, you know. It's like they cut off a finger, they, you know, just deal with it. Anyway, so later on, he's out riding on his horse, going on a hunting expedition. The horse throws him, he falls on the ground, hits a rock, you know, hits his head on a rock, knocked out unconscious. Then some Kali worshippers come along, and they find this unconscious, very powerful-looking person. They think, oh, this would be a very nice offering for Goddess Kali. Right? So they're starting to carry him off, and they take him down. They bind him up, you know, they carry him off, and they put him on the altar, and he wakes up. You know, he's realizes he's in this situation, and the priest is, you know, they use a wooden knife. I'm not sure why they use wood, but they use wooden knife to you know, perform their sacrifice to Kali. Knife or chopper? I can't remember. They're chopping the head off with a spear or a knife. But anyhow, the priest is there, and they've got the weapon like this, just about to kill him, and the priest looks down and notices that his finger is missing from his hand. And so their belief is that you can't offer anything imperfect to Kali. So the priest rejects the offering immediately. Oh, we can't offer this to Kali. Incomplete. So then he starts to become a little bit introspective. Like, oh, this is very interesting. He goes back and he gets his advisor, Arjuna, and says, he explains the whole story to him. He says, just see, you know. And his advisor says, just see, everything Krishna does is okay. So even though you were thinking you lost your finger, and look what happened. And I'm sure we all see this happen in our lives, that there's so many what seem to be reverses in our lives. It seem to be like negative things, and then actually you see in the long run, it actually this turns out to be for our our protection, or our development in Krishna consciousness. So this is the mood of the devotee, is understanding, okay, this is happening right now, but it's because I'm Krishna's servant, it's under Krishna's direction. And there's a nice purport in the 12th chapter of the Gita, where Prabhupada's quoting that verse, Tattena Kampan Su Samikshamano, a very nice verse from the 10th canto, Lord Brahma, prayers to Lord Krishna. And it's describing how the devotee, you know, is you know, going through many, many tribulations in life, appreciating that these are all coming about as part of my own past misdeeds. Yeah? But all the while patiently offering worship and obeisances to the Supreme Personality of God, understanding that this is going on by Krishna's arrangement. And Prabhupada says, actually, in this program, he says, actually, the devotee is thinking that I should suffer so much more than I'm suffering. But Krishna, by his kindness, has reduced this suffering to a token. Just like maybe we hurt our finger. In reality, we should have lost our arm because of all the sinful things I've done in the past. So this is the mood that the devotee is thinking, that, you know, Krishna is making all these nice arrangements for me. So here in the same, in this performance of Yajna, then Shishupal is coming and he's trying to blaspheme Krishna. But the great devotees like Saraswati is seeing, the acharyas are seeing how these words, because they don't want to hear Krishna being blasphemed, so they're seeing these words. This is Krishna's pastime. You know, it's not that when some person comes, you know, you're on the street just reading books and some person comes to you and starts blaspheming Krishna. Oh yes, this person is glorifying Krishna. No, this is a different thing. This is not Krishna's pastime. Hearing Krishna's pastime, we see. Yeah, because these pastimes are all going on under the arrangement of Lord's internal energy. We see how Purnamasi in Vrindavan, she's making all these arrangements. And very interesting arrangements. You know, Krishna's Lila Shakti is making all these different arrangements so the pastimes are satisfying to Krishna. So Krishna can exhibit his opulence, he can exhibit his majesty, his power. So Krishna's devotees are glorified. There's always so much positive things happening in Krishna's pastime. It's not like there's a negativity there. So Saraswati is actually seeing, she's looking for an opportunity to serve Krishna, and she's seeing how these words are glorifying Krishna. And Sanskrit is a very interesting language like that. One word can mean many different things. It's kind of, in one way, English is a bit like that. You've got one word, vow, and that can mean so many different things. It's so confusing. But in Sanskrit, depending on how something's used, it can mean different things. It's very, very interesting language. Now, another thing here, which I find very interesting, and I'm going to create a bit of a, maybe possibly create a bit of a controversy here, because we see here, towards the end of this section, how Sukadeva Goswami is talking about nice picture of the deities in front of us. I forget where it is, but here in this section he's talking how, by saying as an effulgent, he's talking about how Shishupal, you know, the effulgence went up there, and then and actually some people say how the effulgence actually went back to the Vaikuntha planets and then saw Vaikunthanath, you know, the Lord of Vaikuntha, and then came back down here and actually realized that this Vaikunthanath and this Krishna are the same person. But then, here in verse 51, 52. Yeah, later on in this chapter, I can't find it right now. But Sukadeva Goswami talks about how this personality, Shishupal, was actually one of the doorkeepers, Jayant Vijay. Now, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's not my opinion. Prabhupada presents a different conclusion. Now, this is not to confuse you, but just helps me to understand a little bit more about... we'll also explain a little bit about how, you know, the progression that these persons went through. I'm not saying it's Jayant Vijay, I'm not saying it's not, because the Charyas present different ideas here. They went through a different progression. Like in one birth it was, who was the first birth? Hiranyaksha M. And the second birth? Ravana and Kumbhakarna. And the third birth? Shishupal M. Dantavakra. And there was a special one? Jagannath Mantha, yeah. So anyhow, this is discussing from the Prabhupada's commenting on a verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu here. And he's saying this verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Rupa Chila Rupa Goswami, who further discusses the same topic in his Laghu Bhagavatamrita. There, he refers to Vishnu Purana, where Maitreya Muni asked Parashuram in regard to Jayan Vijay, how it was that Hiranyakashipu next became Raman and enjoyed more material happiness than the demigods, but did not attain salvation. Although when he became Shishupal, quarreled with Lord Krishna and was killed, he attained salvation and merged into the body of Lord Krishna. So he's asking, you know, he's a little bit confused about it. Parashuram replied, so this is the mentality of these persons, you know, and why they didn't actually attain salvation. Replied that Hiranyakashipu failed to recognize Lord Nrisimhadev as Lord Vishnu. You know, he was thinking, oh, he's just another person, I'll kill him. You know? Even though people were telling him this is God, he refused to accept that. He said, no, I'll kill him. How can you kill God? Not possible. He thought that Nrisimhadev was some living entity who had acquired such opulence by various pious activities. Being overcome by the motor passion, he considered Lord Nrisimhadev an ordinary living entity, not understanding his form. Nevertheless, because Hiranyakashipu was killed by the hands of Lord Nrisimhadev, in his next life he became Ravan and had proprietorship of unlimited opulences. So he got purified by this experience of being killed. Yeah. But you see, his enmity and his ignorance was so deep that he, you know, even though he was killed by the Lord directly, it took him some time. As Ravan with unlimited material enjoyment, he could not accept Lord Ram as the personality of Godhead. He thought he was just an ordinary human being. So he thought, you know, you can read that. He thought he was just a human being. This Prince of Ayodhya, not accepting the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, even though he was killed by Ram, he did not attain Sayuja, or oneness with the body of the Lord. In his Ravan body, he was too much attracted to Ram's wife, Janaki, and because of that attraction, he was able to see Lord Ram. Yeah? But instead of accepting Lord Ram as an incarnation of Vishnu, you know, because of his attraction to Lakshmi, because, you know, Sita, Janaki is Lakshmi. Because of that attraction, he actually got the opportunity, the benediction of seeing Ram. But instead of accepting Lord Ram as an incarnation of Vishnu, Ravan thought that he was an ordinary living being. When killed at the hands of Ram, therefore, he got the privilege of taking birth as Shishupal. Interesting, Prabhupada says the privilege of taking birth as Shishupal, who had such immense opulence that he could think of himself as a competitor to Krishna. Although Shishupal was always envious of Krishna, he frequently uttered the name of Krishna and always thought of the beautiful features of Krishna. Now, it's an interesting point here that he had such immense opulence, he thought that he was Krishna's competitor. And we see this is the nature of the living entity in the material world, is that when they achieve some material benediction or some, you know, maybe even it's considered to be a spiritual benediction, we become puffed up. I remember when the Brahmacharya Ashram was up here. I don't know how many of you remember that. This used to be the Brahmacharya Ashram upstairs. And my bed was in the corner up there. And then at one point, I got a cupboard in the Brahmacharya Ashram. And I was thinking, this is like, you know, because I lived, you know, because there was, at that time, there was probably maybe 30 Brahmacharis. And it was quite, even though it was a big space, it was kind of, you know, it was crowded. And when I was there, it was all rooms. But before that, it was like, you know, the Brahmacharis all used to sit down one side before they put any walls in, and they had their banana boxes. They didn't even have covers, they had the banana boxes, you know, the cardboard boxes they had bananas in down the other side. That was their storage. So pretty simple. But then they built in, put rooms in there and stuff like that. And I remember that I got a cupboard, and I thought, now I really made it, you know. I've got a spot in the Brahmacharya Ashram. I've got a cupboard. About a week later, I was out of the Brahmacharya Ashram and off to Sydney. So, you know, it happens. You get some little material offers. We get some little, you know, improvement in our situation. And we see the same thing happens in devotional service. Like we might get, you know, initiated, for instance, and we get a spiritual name. We think, now I'm something special. I've got a spiritual name. I'm connected with Krishna. And then we start, we see, so you start to get a little bit puffed up. Or sometimes when devotees get Brahman initiation, they think, now I've got mantra. Now I'm a Brahman. You know, I'm special. You know? So we need to be careful. These, you know, whatever opulence it is that comes, understand that these things are coming by the mercy of Krishna. Not that we become puffed up as Shishupal did and thinking that we're a competitor of Krishna. I'm better now because I've got this. No, understand, what's our position? Gopipata Patakamaloi, Dasa Dasa Anadasa. He's Gopipata Patakamaloi, not me. He's the one who's the master of the gopis. I'm Dasa Dasa Anadasa. I'm the one who's situated, you know, at the lotus feet, you know, of the devotees, you know, not even at the lotus feet of Krishna. You know, just because we get some benediction in devotional service doesn't mean, oh, now I'm close to Krishna. No, the idea is that the more advancement we make, the more we understand how far away from Krishna I am. Not that I've become closer to Krishna. No, I'm actually understanding it further and further. Dasa dasa, anudasa. Anudasa means a thousand times removed. And we just see ourselves as the servant of the devotees. And there's an interesting verse in the Adi Purana. Name bhakti janapada, name bhakti. There's so many names and bhaktas in this verse, I can never get it right. But the first line is Name Bhakti Janapata. How Krishna is explaining to Arjuna, he says, one who says he's my devotee, he's not my devotee. But one who says he's the devotee of my devotee, that person is my devotee. So Krishna is giving a clear guidance there that just try to become the servant of the Vaishnavas. This is the process. And that's why we're talking about yajnas before. This is why when we're performing yajnas, you know, the person who's having the yajna, whether it was some kind of like a samskara, you know, with a grain giving ceremony or griha pravesh or whatever it is, the idea is to try to please the priest, to try to please the brahmins, to try to please the devotees, because I'm just the servant of the devotees. I just want to satisfy the devotees, because if I get their blessings, my life is successful. And we see, it's interesting that in this Rajasuya yajna, what service did Krishna take? What service did Krishna take, do you know? No. What was he doing? He was washing people's feet. Why? Because he was especially interested in getting the blessing of the brahmanas. He wanted to wash the feet of all the brahmanas, of all the devotees, because he wanted to get their blessings. So Krishna, the supreme original personality of Godhead, has taken this menial service. He is the highest person. There is no person higher than Krishna. You know? He is the most worshipable person. Yet, to show us the mood we need to take, he has taken the service which people consider to be the lowest. Why? Because that service is actually the highest. To take this mood, to take this role of being the menial servant of the Vaishnavas, to be the menial servant of the Brahmanas, this is the highest service. And we see Lord Chaitanya himself. We see in the fifth chapter, this is interesting of the Adi Lila, because this discussion is coming in the fifth chapter, where it's talking about the glories of Nityananda Ram. This chapter is a very powerful discussion here about the mood of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He takes the mood of a servant. In every single manifestation, except for Krishna, in any Vishnu avatar, in any whatever avatar it is, Krishna takes the mood of the servant. With the Purusha avatars, he's serving Krishna. You know, when he manifests as Balaram, what does Balaram do? He simply serves, even though he's Krishna's older brother, he serves Krishna. He manifests as Lord Krishna's couch. He manifests as Lord Krishna's Brahman thread. He manifests as Lord Krishna's shoes, so Krishna can stand on him. He manifests as his, is it Brahman thread? Umbrella? All these different things. His vehicle, you know, his palanquin. He manifests these things. And we see that Lord Chaitanya also manifested in this mood as a servant of Krishna. So this is actually the... And Prabhupada explains in the purport here, not this purport, another purport, how this is actually the highest realization. That the highest position is to be a servant. And that's why Lord Chaitanya wanted to. He wanted to experience this highest position that is experienced by Srimati Radharani, of being the servant of Krishna. So we see materialistic people, they never want to take this mood of being servant. They always want to take the position of being master. You know? Everyone, in the business world, you know, Visvajit can tell us very clearly about all this. Everyone's competing. What do they want? They want to be top of the pile. They want to have the biggest pay packet. Isn't it? You don't see anyone saying, no, I just want to have the simplest job. I just want to serve everyone in the company. Maybe, have you ever seen that? In the corporate world, you never see things like that. No, everyone wants to be top of the pile. This is the materialistic tendency. Why? Everyone wants to be God. They want to be the supreme enjoyer. They want to enjoy with the gopis in Vrindavan. Who is that demon who tried to steal the gopis? Remember? Sankachuda. Yeah, the one with the conch on his head, which later became Krishna's conch shell. So, yeah, he tried to steal the gopis. Everyone wants to enjoy. That's the nature, you know. Everyone wants to have their gopis. Everyone wants to be Radha and Krishna. Perform their Rasalila pastimes in the groves of Vrindavan. With, you know, millions and millions of young women. Everyone wants to do that. They want to be God. That's the reason we're in this world, is because we have this enjoying tendency, because we want to lord it over the material nature. You know, Krishna says in the 16th chapter, he says, Ishra Hambo Gisura Hambalavam Sukhi. This is the demoniac mentality, that I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, I am powerful, I am strong. Sukho Hambalavam Sukhi. I'm so happy, you know. I have this one, he's my enemy, I will kill him. I killed this one also. You know, it's talking about how, you know, the demoniac mentality. And we see, just like you look at what was his name? Kamsa. He imprisoned his father. You know, he killed the other ones. What was that king? Was it Akbar? Aurangzeb, thank you. Yeah, Aurangzeb. He killed his brothers. He imprisoned his father. Just so he could be. I was listening to this lecture the other day, and Prabhupada was talking about this book called Shah Jahan. It was really interesting. It was actually a book that was written about Shah Jahan and one of a Bengali author, something Roy, I can't remember his name. And his friend was questioning the topic of the book. He says, "You call the book Shah Jahan, but actually the book is all about Aurangzeb." And so the Prabhupada was using this to explain how the author is actually the only one who can really understand the nature of the book. And he's saying, no, actually Shah Jahan, because this is all about his suffering because of the nonsense of his son. So he killed his brothers and he imprisoned his father so he could be king. This is the materialistic mentality. Mentality of a Vaishnava is the opposite. The Vaishnava is understanding that the highest position is service. There's no higher position than service. So whatever position we have in life, try to imbibe this understanding that the greatest position is to be service. Just like I see, you know, like in Grihastha life, this is a really good one. Generally speaking, the man thinks that he's the master and that his wife should serve him. But then I see some of the Grihastha men taking care of, and the children, etc., you know, they take, you know, like they're thinking they're master of children, etc., like that, taking care of their wives, taking care of their children, making sure their needs are met. This is actually, it's a role of service. And the opposite is also there for the lady. Her mood is also to be one of service. Not that they become the slave. You know, so now I've married a free slave. It's not like that. No, it's a role, it's mutual service. Not mutual proprietorship, but mutual service. We serve each other to serve Krishna. We're trying to cooperate together to serve Krishna. And you find that in marriages that are not harmonious, generally it's because this service attitude is not there. But in marriages that are harmonious, you'll find generally the harmony comes from this common purpose of serving Krishna. Serve each other to serve Krishna. And you'll find in the same in our spiritual life. As long as we have this common purpose of serving Krishna, everything will go nicely. As soon as we start to put ourselves in the center, as soon as we start to put ourselves in the forefront, looking for how can I be served in this situation, then there will be disturbance. And this is exactly what is happening here. Krishna is being glorified. Shishupal cannot tolerate this because he wants to be glorified. Why is this person being glorified? He's saying, oh, there's so many other people that should be glorified, but actually he's thinking, I should be glorified. This is his mentality. I should be glorified. I'm the greatest person here. Because, as Prabhupada is saying, he's so puffed up with his immense opulence, incredible opulence. And we see that in so many instances in the Vedic history, so many instances even in modern history. You know, I mean, you can look at the wars that have happened throughout the world, you know, there's a ruler of a small country becomes very, very powerful, the people all bow down, touch their feet, stuff like that, they think they can take over the world. How many people have actually achieved it? No, they all become humiliated. They all become embarrassed. And sometimes so embarrassed they have to commit suicide. And they just get puffed up. So the point I'm making here is whatever opulence we have, understand this has come by the mercy of Krishna. Whether it's, you know, we're fabulously wealthy, whether we have a nice position in life, whether we have a nice spiritual position, whether we have, first initiation, second initiation, a nice room in the ashram, whatever it is, a beautiful family, nice children, whatever. These are all, all these things are considered opulences, good birth, good, lots of wealth, learning, knowledge, beautiful body. Beautiful body. These are all actually opulences of Krishna, and they can come and go in a second. You may have so much wealth, and you see, so many times the stock market crashes, and these people are incredibly wealthy. What do? They all jump out of the building because they lost all their wealth. So, these things come, they're just ephemeral. They come and go so quickly. Don't be attached to them. Don't think that I've become special. As soon as we think I've become special, this is the beginning of downfall. It will come. Be sure of it. It will come. And then you'll be embarrassed. You were thinking, maybe I shouldn't say you, I will be embarrassed. I am thinking that I have this opulence. I'm so special. I'm so this, I'm so that. In a moment, that can all be taken away. And certainly, at the moment of death, everything is taken away. Then what do you have? You have nothing. We only have our connection with Krishna. So keep this connection with Krishna at the forefront. All these opulences, keep them behind. They don't really matter that much. If you can use them to serve Krishna, this is wonderful. But if they're just all about me, 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 how wonderful I am because I'm this, because I'm that. I've got a position, I've got this, I've got this, nothing. It's temporary. It's good to meditate upon these things. So he's saying here, so he was always thinking of Krishna. Thus, by constantly thinking and chanting Krishna, even unfavorably, he was cleansed of the contamination of his sinful activity. When Shishupal was killed by the Sudarshan Chakra of Krishna as an enemy, his constant remembrance of Krishna dissolved the reactions of his vices, and he attained salvation by becoming one with the body of the Lord. So it's describing the progression from Hiranyakashipu to who was next? Kamsa? Rama, sorry. And then Shishupal. So how he became purified. So he's saying, Prabhupada says, from this incident one can understand that even a person who thinks of Krishna as an enemy and is killed by him may be liberated by becoming one with the body of Krishna. What then must be the destination of devotees who always think favorably of Krishna as their master or friend? As we talked about this anukulyena Krishnanu, this thinking of Krishna favorably is anukul and pratikul. Pratikul means unfavorable. So someone who thinks of Krishna unfavorably, or like we see Shishupal here, or the demons, or the Mayavadis, they're thinking of Krishna unfavorably. What is their destination? Brahmajyoti. They achieve liberation into Brahman. They become one with the effulgence of the Lord. They don't actually become one. They actually are situated in that situation because the living entity. As it says, Najayate Miyate Vakadashin Nayam Bhutva Bhagata Bhatna Bhuya, Ajo Nityori Shashwato Yam Parano, Nahanite Hanumana Shivira. For the soul, there is neither birth nor death in any time. He has not come into being, does not come into birth, will not, unborn ever existing primeval, not slain when the body is slain. The soul never ceases to exist. So it appears to merge, but actually there's no merging there. So Prabhupada's introducing this concept here that actually the demons and the Mayavadis, they attain Brahman. But the devotees, they go back to Krishna's abode. So I'll read on a bit further. These devotees must attain a situation better than Brahma Loka, the impersonal bodily effulgence of Krishna. Devotees cannot be situated in the impersonal Brahman effulgence into which impersonalists desire to merge. Devotees cannot go there because they're very dear to Krishna. The devotees are placed in Vaikuntha or Krishna Loka. So the Prabhupada concludes. This discussion between Maitreya Muni and Parashurama Muni centered on whether devotees come down into the material world in every millennium like Jaya and Vijaya, who were cursed by the Kumaras to that effect. In the course of these instructions to Maitreya about Hiranyakashipu, Ravana and Shishupal, Parashurama did not say that these demons were formerly Jaya and Vijaya. He simply described the transmigration through three lives. It is not necessary for the Vaikuntha associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to come to take the roles of his enemies in all millenniums in which he appears. The fall down of Jayan Vijay occurred in a particular millennium. Jayan Vijay did not come down in every millennium to act as demons. To think that associates of the Lord fall down from Vaikuntha in every millennium to become demons is totally incorrect. So we see this. How do we resolve this? Because here we see that Prabhupada is saying not Jai Vijay. Yet we see that Sukadeva Goswami is saying they are Jai Vijay. What are any comments on this?
Does Krishna have the same pastimes every millennium or each time?
Yeah. Similar. Not identical. I mean, we get boring for him if it was identical. But similar. Even as described in one particular, I think it's the Upanishad, maybe it's the Brihat. I forgot which one it is. In one of the Upanishads, it describes how when Buddha comes, some millenniums he comes as a spaceman. So it depends on how degraded the age is. This age here, because of Krishna's appearance, Lord Chaitanya's appearance, Kali hasn't progressed so much. So the contamination, the material contamination is not so developed. But in other areas, when Lord Buddha appears, the contamination is much more developed. So you know, people are flying around in space and stuff like that. So what do you think? How do we understand that? That some acharyas are saying one thing and some acharyas are saying another thing? Which one's right? Which one's wrong? Well, here Prabhupada's saying that Jayan Vijay didn't come down as this, because they're discussing Hiranyakashipu, Shishupal, etc. He's saying that this is not Jayan Vijay, but whereas in other places we see the acharyas are saying this is Jayan Vijay. Yeah, that's what he's saying. So how do we understand that? Yeah, that's understood, and Prabhupada's explaining that here. Yeah, but Prabhupada's saying here that in another millennium, Jayan Vijay came down, but not this millennium. But we see that in the Bhagavatam, they're saying something different. And what I'm asking is, how do we understand that? Maybe. Because that's one point to consider, because the Bhagavatam is not chronological. Which Jayan Vijay Sukadeva Goswami is talking about, we don't know. Also, another point to consider here is the acharyas have different conclusions. You can read, there's one conclusion, there's a discussion about Lakshmi, I think it's in the sixth canto, where it's talking about some acharyas consider that Lakshmi also has representative Paramatma in her body. Other acharyas think different. But it doesn't mean that one's right and one's wrong, it's just a different perspective. It's just like, the Prabhupada would give the perception of the elephant. You have blind, I'm not saying the acharyas are blind men, this is just an analogy, but a blind man will go and feel the trunk of the elephant. He'd say, well, the elephant feels like a fire hose. And another one will go feel the tail. And say, no, I think the elephant feels like a brush. And they're feeling, one feels like, oh, like a tree trunk. So depending on the perspective of the personality, then they'll have a different perspective, they'll have a different explanation of it. But it doesn't mean, it's not saying that one's wrong and one's right. It's just a different perspective on it. So, and Prabhupada's saying here in this discussion also, the fact that we see in this pastime how Shishupal, he went up into the sky, and then he came back down and merged into the body of Krishna. This indicates that he was a demon, therefore not Jayan Vijay. So in other pastimes we see that he doesn't merge into the body of Krishna, other things happen. Yet we see that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains this in a different way. He says that Shishupal's, you know, soul entered into the body of Krishna, but when Krishna went back to the spiritual realm, then this soul came out and resumed his service. So different explanations. So it kind of gives another interesting aspect of devotional service, because I mean, I have this tendency, I like to see things very black and white, but Krishna's not black and white. Krishna's pastimes are not black and white. They're multifaceted. Never think you can understand Krishna. Our tendency is we want to put everything in a box and say, yes, it's this big, it's like this, it's like that, it does this, it does that, finish, close the lid, end of story. This is the human tendency, we like to sum things up and understand everything. Because why? This is controlling tendency. Because when I understand it, when I understand it perfectly, it means I can control it. Yeah. But that Krishna's not like that. Krishna's pastimes are not like that. You will never fully understand. You know, and we see, you know, just the different acharyas are explaining some of the things they explain. It's just like, it just leaves my head swimming, you know, with the way they explain. You know, just like, I think the last time we gave class here, was a few months back, there was some discussion about, the acharyas were talking about how different gopis were saying different prayers to Krishna. And just by the way they were addressing Krishna, the acharyas could understand who they were. Just because, well, this one's talking like this, this is the mood of this person. This one's talking like this, this is the mood of that person. So you read the acharya's commentaries and it gives so much light on the pastimes of Krishna, but never consider we can fully understand these things. Our goal, our duty, our endeavor should be remain always just as a humble servant of Krishna. Just praying and hoping that someday he will give me some drop of understanding so I can just appreciate and become more and more attached to his pastimes, more and more attached to his glorious pastimes, his beautiful transcendental form. Never, you know, I wasn't sort of saying this to sort of read this to give some confusion, but just to show us how we can never really fully understand these things, because there's so many different facets of Krishna's pastimes. All these explanations are correct. How they are correct? Who knows? There's one controversial purport, especially for ladies. This purport is very controversial in the Bhagavatam, where Prabhupada talks about things like his life. And I've seen different devotees try to explain this. And basically all that happens is they get themselves into a lot of hot water. I just, like, I'm not saying I'm humble or anything. Devotees who know me know that I'm not a very humble person. I just think the safest thing to say is, sorry, I don't understand. I mean, Prabhupada is how can we appreciate the greatness of Srila Prabhupada? I mean, you just look at what he did. A single person, one person on his own, took Krishna consciousness all around the world, made 7,000 disciples, opened, now in ISKCON there's 370 odd temples. This is all the achievement. And this society is still going on from strength to strength, all on the back of the achievements of one person. Don't think that we're doing it. It's done by Prabhupada's greatness. So I just conclude from things that I just don't understand. And I think that's the safest position to take, is when we say, don't speculate, don't try and conclude, oh yeah, I think because. Because we see that one acharya is saying this, another acharya is saying something else, another acharya will say something else. Just like the jiva, when the fall of the jiva, when that issue was being discussed, devotees were campaigning, no, this is the truth, and they were offending each other and being very strong-minded and strong-headed about this. And, but how can we, how can we understand these things? We're just anu, keep that in mind. We are tiny, insignificant, atomic sparks of the spiritual nature. Tiny, tiny, tiny. We're Krishna. What's his position? He is unlimited. Abhigya and Surat, it says in the introduction of the Gita. He's unlimited. You can never understand. How can something... It's just like, sometimes you're standing there and an ant will come up and walk on your foot. I'm sure you've all had that experience, right? How can an ant ever, understand the size or the wholeness of the person whose foot they're walking on? For them, it's just a lump. Maybe it's a hill or something. They don't see the whole thing. So we can never understand Krishna. So, you know, don't try to think that you know Krishna. Don't try to think that you know Krishna's pastime. Just appreciate the wonder of him. Appreciate how wonderful a person he is. And the, you know, the fact that he's given us this opportunity to try and understand something about him. This is the hour day. Okay, thank you so much for patiently listening. Has anyone got any questions or? Yes, Rupa.
Yes, there are more than 500 hymns.
Yeah, on the ISKCON database there's 377, 76, something like that. I just regularly go through that. Find out, you know, to write to the temples and find out how the deity worship is going.
The rest of these
underground ones. Preaching centers and, I mean, the underground ones, if you've got deities that are still in the database, you know, like Namhat centers and preaching centers don't really. I mean, some places you go, there's a lot of Namhat centers. Not so many temples. In Europe, there's not a lot of temples. Like in a place like France, there's 3 temples. France has got a much bigger population than Australia. In Australia, there's 9-10 temples.
But the other one, one question.
Yeah.
You know, the king was kind of singing over the doors. They blamed Krishna, but he didn't respect him.
They didn't blame Krishna. No, he didn't say that. He didn't say that. He was challenging his thing. Is how is this okay? You're saying that everything Krishna does is okay, but how I've cut my finger off. How is this okay? But that's the point. It's like, you know, he's saying that, you know, all these things are going on by the arrangement of Krishna or by, you know, the sanction of Krishna. It's not like Krishna is doing it directly. But he's just trying to point out that you know, you need to see the good in everything to see how it's, you know, a positive thing. He's just using that as an instance to show. But devotees see like that. Devotees don't try to blame Krishna. They see. The mood of a devotee is to see that everything that good happens that happens to me is by the mercy of Krishna, and everything bad that happens to me is by my own foolishness. Always try to take this positive aspect, you know. Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
We are the boss of the Lord Krishna. And we also have the same opulences in fractional proportion.
Yeah.
So how can we use these opulences in serving?
Every way you can. Just like you see, we're doing deity worship here. So, you know, some devotees are very good at sewing clothes. Some devotees are very good at making garlands. Some devotees have money. But these are all various opulences. You know, whatever you, Krishna says, yad karoshi, yad shanasi, yad juhosidati, yad pashyasi kunteya, tad purushamarama. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, whatever austerity you perform, you do that as Sankunti is offering to me. So whatever it is you do, whatever it is you have in life, you know, if you're very expert, just like Koti, is Koti here today? Yeah, so Koti, right? Koti is an IT expert. Yeah? Runs networks and things, right? So this is, you know, Krishna has gifted him with a particular type of intelligence where he can understand a computer. For me, they're just confusing things, you know. Whenever I have trouble, I ask him to fix it for me. Yeah? But he comes here and he maintains the temple network. So that's an opulence he has. See, we understand, Krishna explains in the 10th chapter of the Gita, what's that verse? Whatever glorious opulence and whatever manifests as, you know, the glorious things you see. Huh? What's the first line? No. You should understand that whatever glorious opulence and wonderful creations in here, they spring from but a spark of my splendor. Now in the purport, Prabhupada explains, this is just like a strong man. He's got big muscles. we understand this is a manifestation of Krishna's splendor, not mine. Because what splendor do we have? We have nothing. You know, we're just a tiny, infinitesimal spark of the spiritual energy. And actually, if you analyze the situation of the jiva in the body, here we are, you see this strong man, he's thinking, I'm so strong, I'm so powerful, I can do this, I can do that. But actually, that's because he's thinking he's the body. The situation of the jiva in the body is he is the tiny spiritual spark situated within the region of the heart. Now, along with that spiritual spark is situated the paramatma. That is the energy of the paramatma which is pervading the entire body. The jiva has a desire. The paramatma causes the body to act in such a way to fulfill that desire. Krishna explains in the Gita that I am the fire of digestion. I am the taste in the vegetable. I am the light in the moon and the sun. All these offerings are Krishna. The ability we have to digest something is Krishna. The ability we have to move the muscle in the body, I want to touch this, that's Krishna's arrangement. I'm not doing that. I just have a desire. Krishna enacts that desire. So with that understanding that everything I have, everything I do, is actually done by Krishna anyhow, then you can understand what you should do for Krishna. Everything. Everything you do should be for Krishna. Because it's all done by Him anyhow. It's just like, you know, you see, if you go to India, you may go to, you know, one of the places where the Ganges flows, and you see people offering tarpana. Right? You know what tarpana is? They take the water of the Ganges, they offer it back to the Ganges. So everything Krishna says, you know, in the 10th chapter of the Gita, again, what's that verse? He says that aham savasya prabho matha savam bhavata iti matha bhajantimam buddha bhava. So he says buddha, people with intelligence, bhava samandhidaha. He says that I am the source of all spiritual material worlds. Everything, aham sarvasya means everything, nothing left out. That I am the source of everything. Everything emanates from me. And the wise who perfectly understands Buddha, that means a person with intelligence who understands this, they worship me with all their heart. So the thing is to understand Krishna's position, to understand my position. Of course, you can't understand Krishna's position fully. You understand little. Yeah? But understand what the connection is there, what the relationship is there. This is the beginning of spiritual life, sambandha. What is the relationship? Then understanding sambandha, you know, avideya, how to act. You know, and by acting in the proper way, then we achieve prayojana. So, if you understand who Krishna is to some extent, then you know, actually, I must do everything. Everything I have, I must offer to Him. Yeah, but see, if you're taking, you have an opulence, you use it for yourself, this is the enjoying mood. If you have an opulence and you use it for Krishna, this is servant mood. You know? And even like you can be driving a big fancy car for the pleasure of Krishna. You know, there's so many wealthy devotees, you know, they have a big fancy car, but they're actually servants of Krishna. You know, you can drive a car. Just I had an experience here last weekend. I met a lady here. She was from Sydney, western suburbs of Sydney. And she had met someone who was a taxi driver. She'd just been to, it's interesting. She just see how Krishna works, right? This is a real interesting story of how Krishna works. There was an art exhibition recently in at the National Gallery, and it was Krishna art. They were showing all different paintings of Krishna and different art of Krishna and stuff like that. And apparently, I didn't go there, but apparently there's some explanation of Krishna's, you know, story, his life and stuff. You know, obviously we understand there's probably some incorrect information there. Anyhow, so this girl, she comes out of this art show, she's just seen this art show on Krishna. She gets into a taxi. Lo and behold, the taxi driver's a devotee. Yeah? The taxi driver starts to preach to her, sells her a book. Yeah? And then he says, oh, you should come to the temple here in Rice Park. So that day, she comes to the temple. I was speaking to her for a while, you know, to, I think she was a man, I saw Prabhupada's room, stuff for a while, and sold her a Gita. Yeah? So, you know, the taxi driver, the point I was getting at here is the taxi driver is using his job, you know, his means of making money as service to Krishna. Anyone who gets into his taxi, and I know a taxi driver in London, the same Robin, nice devotee, you know, and he's got, the London cabs are quite different from the Australian cabs. He's got this like little book stand on his dashboard there, and he's always got books with a picture of Krishna facing it. So he's using that work as service for Krishna. So everything we do, somehow or other connected with Krishna. You know, like, okay, you've got a job, you're doing, you know, you may consider it very, very mundane, you're a family person. You're working in this seemingly very, very mundane job, but what do you do with the money from the job? You use it to take care of devotees. You know, your family, your devotees, your wife, your children, whatever, the devotees. So you use that money to take care of the devotees. This is service to Krishna. It doesn't necessarily mean that only things you do here in the temple are service to Krishna. If that is the case, then you need to work on developing your consciousness and see how everything I do is service for Krishna. Of course, if we're doing something for the gratification of my senses, that is not service for Krishna, that is sense gratification. But we need to see how we can organize so that everything is service for Krishna. And it's not difficult, it just takes, you know, as Prabhupada would say, it's just taking the I out of everything and putting Krishna. You put Krishna in the center of everything. Do everything for Krishna in your service. Okay. So thank you so much. Vankarashira Bhavatama ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavesha Bhaktivinda ki, Jayanitai Gopremanandi.